T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
The Bernstein and Golf Show.
Ever since they let Jim Rice in, it's changed the context. And now...
You've got a Jim Rice problem.
We do. They've created for themselves a Jim Rice problem where, as we go through this massive list... All I'm going to say is yes or no to a legitimate debate. Well, trying to reconcile old me with new me, and it's not easy.
You hear this, Tanner? You hear this?
Sounds like a midlife crisis or something.
Because you know what?
On.
These conversations, he hadn't had these in a while. No, these, and these things change.
Bernstein and Golf on 670 The Score.
Things do change. Life changes. Sports changes. And guess what? There are changes happening in the conversations about the Hall of Fame. Now, last night I wasn't thinking about it. We went over the list together, had a little fun, and I knew you would
Of this year's nominees,
and I knew you would do a deep dive at some point when we get closer and closer to the finalists being awarded with their Hall of Fame induction. But Joe Morgan, ladies and gentlemen, stepped into the news cycle and said, you know what? Me and my fellas been talking. And damn it, I'm going to knock out a long letter. He sent. Now, did the email go out to everyone?
Everyone on that Hall of Fame's official e-blast list, because Morgan is technically the Hall's vice chairman and a member of the board of directors. He said he wasn't speaking for all Hall of Famers. However, it clearly has the imprimatur of the Hall of Fame. When this is the vice chair of the organization, and yeah, it's just a museum in upstate New York. It's not connected with MLB. But he's sending this out as a shot across the bow from him. And I think the fact that it's coming from him is part of the problem. But as part of his letter, he wrote, "The more we Hall of Famers talk about this, and we talk about it a lot, we realize we can no longer sit silent. Many of us have come to think that silence will be considered complicity, or that fans might think we're okay if the standards of election to the Hall of Fame are relaxed, at least relaxed enough for steroid users to enter and become members of the most sacred place in baseball. We don't want fans ever to think that. We hope the day never comes when known steroid users are voted into the Hall of Fame." It happened already.
Yeah.
"They cheated. Steroid users don't belong here. Players who failed drug tests, admitted using steroids, or were identified as users in Major League Baseball's investigation into steroid abuse, known as the Mitchell Report, should not get in. Those are the three criteria that many of the players and I think are right." So he's doing like the whole caller thing. Like, I'm representing more than just myself.
My constituency,
yes,
and I
many
have talked,
of the players.
And we all hate your show.
Right. No, I tell you, everybody I know, they all say that you suck. So that's probably fine.
Right.
But there's so many problems with this. The first being that Joe Morgan is one of the most vocal supporters of Pete Rose's candidacy.
And then you have the amphetamines talk.
There you go. I'd like to ask Joe Morgan if he ever tried amphetamines. Because we know that they put the hustle in Charlie Hustle, and he has Pete Rose has said so, and that's the man whose candidacy is very important to him. Willie Mays, famous for using the red juice. There's the entire amphetamine issue and what that meant to prolong careers.
I was just keeping guys up. I read a lot of that on Twitter.
Yeah, to help.
The travel wasn't as plush.
Oh, that's what it is.
You know,
sure.
guys got in late, bumpy rides. Next thing you know, you're playing a day game in Wrigley. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, just a little pick me up. 5-hour energy.
Mm-hmm. It's all it is. Yep. 5-hour energy. Sure. There's also the issue of guys who racked up a ton of numbers in a league before they allowed people of color to play.
And that's where I come in, as you thought. 1947, ladies and gentlemen. When did baseball get kicked off, Shep? You know, established in
1870-something.
All right. You've got damn near 60 years where brown people weren't allowed to play your game, and you're going to talk to me about drugs? Get your ass out of here. Like, dude, I'm going to let you finish, though, because I have a question at the end of this.
There's also any number of players who, based on photographic evidence, when we saw Jeff Bagwell 1 year show up not looking like the Jeff Bagwell we knew and loved, when we saw a 120th round pick in Mike Piazza all of a sudden become a golden god and hit baseballs out of every park, we wondered what might be going on.
Remember when Pudge Rodriguez showed up?
Range of motion. Remember? Ivan Rodriguez, same year as Bagwell.
Marlins year, right?
When Ivan Rodriguez, he didn't have the giant shovel-faced jaw anymore. He had a normal-sized head. And have you seen him lately? That all of a sudden, remember, he dropped 40 pounds in one offseason because he wanted to get lighter and improve his range of motion behind the plate.
Right.
So let's not play games here. Let's not play games. And my belief right now, if the numbers say you're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer.
And it's as simple as that.
If
Dan.
The numbers and the numbers are even an issue now too, because we're looking at numbers differently. We're looking at pitching careers differently. There's the arbitration model by which if I can prove I'm better than this Hall of Famer in this era, I deserve to be in. Now that's where when Lou Whitaker has 7-8 guys already in the Hall of Fame who are nowhere near as good as he was. There are some arguments here to just open those doors, but it somehow diminishes somebody like Joe Morgan to let this happen. I'm not sure why it diminishes him. I'm not sure why he can't understand that he was in a locker room full of guys on amphetamines. The most famous one of all, the best player, the guy that drove some of those teams was maybe on more amphetamines than the rest of the team combined in Pete Rose. And that's the guy he's actively campaigning for to get in the Hall of Fame. You can't have Joe Morgan write this letter. And here's why. An entire generation of baseball fans knows Joe Morgan as a clown. From ridiculous statements that were made on national broadcast when they finally got him off that national broadcast because he was routinely made fun of for saying things that were flatly wrong, that made no sense, that were unsupportable by fact. In fact, there was an entire website, firejoemorgan.com, the late and lamented firejoemorgan.com, that spurned some terrific writers who I think are still writing to this day. The whole point being, he's a joke. He was a great baseball player.
Mm-hmm.
Tremendous baseball player.
Second best second baseman of all time.
But he's become a joke to a lot of people, to the generation you're reaching out to. And as you start paring away the roles of voters, which they are, they're getting rid of people who aren't full-time baseball writers. You're going to have younger and younger and younger baseball writers who don't feel that they're necessarily gatekeepers of something so sacred.
And that's where I come in. Because for too long, baseball has placed itself in this conversation of, well, we're better than that. And this is what we just don't do this in baseball. Oh, let 5 or 6 people in on a ballot? Ha 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 ha. Not at all. You'll have to wait your turn. Like these conversations have made baseball feel old and feel curmudgeonly and feel just archaic. And then you get a breath of fresh air probably, I don't know, about 5, 6 years ago where the game started to feel younger, maybe longer than that. And you're like, oh, okay. This is a different vibe. Maybe the people that are running the other sports started running baseball. I'm just talking about in thinking. And now we get to the Hall of Fame conversation. I got 2 questions for you. Does it matter to you? And how much does it matter to you? Because the people that love basketball don't sit and squabble about the Basketball Hall of Fame. Not the NBA Hall of Fame, the Basketball Hall of Fame, because there is a Basketball Hall of Fame where women's basketball, college basketball, you know, European basketball. If you're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer. The NFL Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
Where we watch that god-awful game in Canton every single year and watch long speeches with guys who are ready to keel over on the podium because they're sweating and they're nervous. We don't quibble about that. Right? All right. You want to put Andre Tippett in? Damn it, I'm for it. You know, if you think that some wide receiver because he had the good counting numbers and you got in the room and you said, you know what? Yeah, this guy was a Hall of Famer, actually. All right, fine. I'm all for it because I still love the game. I still like watching the game if you're a football fan. But for some reason, the Baseball Hall of Fame – has grinded itself into this not fun thing. When the conversation is supposed to be fun. We're supposed to be throwing back and forth. Oh, this is what this guy did. And this, he did it in the steroid era. Or I don't believe this guy was on steroids. And then you look at the numbers. Oh, the numbers are skewed. That's fine. It's a museum. It's less of a club and more of a snapshot in time. And if we, like you mentioned, before 1947, people of color couldn't play. You mean to tell me that those guys weren't Hall of Famers? They were in these barnstorming leagues and going from you know, the Chitlin Circuit to coming up here in Chicago and playing these teams and beating the pants off of them and making sure that nobody wrote about it because you didn't want your great All-American boys to feel bad about it. What are we doing here? We're still having these conversations about the Baseball Hall of Fame that are ridiculous to me. It is a snapshot in time. Were you the man during this snapshot in time? Whether you took amphetamines, whether you did PEDs, were you the guy? Were you the guy that, because they're not giving any of that revenue back. These managers are still walking around with World Series rings, Tony La Russa, right? These guys are still, everybody still ate off of all the PED stuff, but you don't want to include it in your game's history? It's ridiculous to me. That's why I'm glad a lot of these guys are dying off. Or being found that they haven't visited a baseball stadium in decades. So now they lose their vote. Get out of here. I'm done with you.
I saw this tweet from Buster Olney, a longtime baseball writer, New York Times, ESPN. He said, Baseball's Hall of Fame honors great baseball players, not ball players who are perfect human beings. There are no hallowed grounds. Start with this. The guy believed to have written the Hall of Fame's so-called character clause was a segregationist.
Simple as that. Simple.
Right?
Simple. You want me to judge you by your absolutes? All right, I'll do it all day long, but don't drop them. Don't become righteous when it's about the 90s and the aughts, because that's really what this is.
Yeah, there's a tweet here from Coach Tom who sent before and after pictures of Brady Anderson.
Come on, yeah. The monster. I mean, these dudes said to themselves, "Here's an edge.
Yep,
I'm gonna jump on this and see what happens." Like. I love how we do this, and then when it comes to football, it's like, no. It's understood. Well, guess what? Your rules were broken with a wink and a nudge by your commissioner and by every owner of every franchise. Stop it.
I just think for them to sit in a room and say, we want Joe Morgan's name on this.
Yeah, how do you have to understand the messenger.
It's all exactly. Yeah. The biggest mistake you made was instead of just having it come from a group or some executive that nobody's ever heard of or Jeff Idelson, whoever it might be, the fact that you brand this thing with Joe Morgan on it, you got to realize a whole generation of people go, ugh, even before they read it. The moment I saw, this is a letter from Joe Morgan, my first thought is, this is going to be stupid. Because most of what he says about baseball is stupid.
When I saw the subject, I knew it was going to be stupid. We knew what was going on, just like we know what's going on in football. Like, just because
we don't care about it in football because they're already freaks. They aren't even human beings. You can't even see their faces.
Things change. It used to be the everyman game. I can compare myself to the Mick and DiMaggio, and you know, when I'm on my bus route, I can listen to a game on the radio and feel like I'm right there in Yankee Stadium. Well, guess what? This ain't those days anymore.
Right.
He makes 75 times more than you do. He has a beautiful home that you can fit your whole block in. And by the way, he might have cycled some roids back in the day. Like, this is, unfortunately, you know, the other part of this too is, like, that's the last sport where people feel like role models exist, or you can teach your kid, if you play the game the right way, you can be like this guy. And then you find out the right way is aided a little bit.
Have you seen the video, the 1 minute video of Jose Altuve going back to his home diamond in Venezuela?
No.
It's amazing.
Why?
Because it's just wonderful. First of all, the diamond is overgrown with weeds and garbage. And he talks about, he just tells the story about he and his dad ever since he was 4 years old. And he and his dad would go there. And they only had one ball, and he'd hit the ball, and the dad would go get it and bring it back. He'd hit the ball, and the dad would go get it and bring it back. And he said, look over there. He said, when I would hit a foul ball up on top of that building,
go get it.
He said the day was over. We couldn't get it.
Wow.
So what we had, he said we had to get a ball. We had to figure out how we were going to get a ball. So they would go, there was a nearby pro team in their little national league. I was a minor league team, or and they would wait for a home run. And he would go chase down the home run, and he'd come back and say, Dad, I got a ball. I got a ball. We can practice again.
That's pretty cool.
And he said, that's where he learned to hit. That's where he learned. I could hit it this far. I can hit it this far. I can hit it, and grounder after grounder until the sun went down. But they had to, it sometimes took him days before he could get another baseball. He said sometimes that first swing would be another foul ball, and they'd be out of ball again. So there was a response. When I tweeted that video, there was a response from a Twitter follower who just said, don't tell me that that kid can't swag out a home run.
Right.
Don't tell me that well, they're too happy. They're showing too much emotion. Kid that came up that way, that didn't come up on a travel team in the suburbs that was financed by local business. That kid,
the natural exuberance,
exactly. Yeah. That kid scratching and clawing. And I think baseball's moving in a direction where we understand some of this stuff now. And the best thing that the Hall of Fame has going for it is that it's purging the voter rolls, which is why I find it tone deaf that very same Hall of Fame that made that decision would now want to trot out something with Joe Morgan attached to it. Isn't that pulling in an opposite direction? Don't you have, if winds blow in different ways here, trying to serve two masters? I'm not sure what you're doing.
I just don't know what it does for the sport either, because like you said, those guys are already in. So you're going to yank those guys out, or you're going to put up a fence now? Like, you can't do that. You can't do that. And I'm sure has Joe Morgan been asked about amphetamines? Is he on record?
Declined interview requests.
At all in his career.
Pete Rose is on record?
Is Joe Morgan on record, though? This is a guy with sway and a guy that obviously, you know, he can shake some trees in the Baseball Hall of Fame committees and people listen. This guy's sending out emails and it's a national story. Has he been asked, or is he on record at all throughout his career or his broadcasting career, his post-career, whatever the case may be, about how he feels about amphetamines?
I haven't heard anything official. This segment brought to you by Walgreens with expert pharmacy care from Walgreens. Diabetes won't slow you down. Stop by for the medications you rely on and supplies from all the major brands. Walgreens at the corner of Happy and Healthy. Got some blinking lights in front of me. 312-644-6767. 240, Adam Kramer is going to talk a little college football, but some baseball stuff was top of mind today on The Score.
I love the postscript on Joe Morgan's letter. P.S. Families come to Cooperstown because they know it's special. To parents, it's a place they can take their kids for an uplifting, feel-good visit. It's a place where kids can
think of the children.
It's a place where kids can see what true greatness is all about. Me. No, I didn't say that part. It's a place where youngsters can dream that one day they, too, might get in. The place is special. I hope it stays that way. I'm Joe Morgan.
I love it. Deadspin just posted a story with the headline, Joe Morgan doesn't think Willie Mays belongs in the Hall of Fame.
That's what you're saying. What you're saying.
So Joe Morgan, two-time NL MVP, all-time great, Hall of Famer, and vice chairman of the Hall's board of directors, sent an email today from the General Hall of Fame email address to current voters, arguing, among other things, that drug users like Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, and Mickey Mantle shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, and that their fellow drug users should be excluded going forward. Yes, this bleep again.
Yeah, man. Yep. It's weird, and I know the Cool Papa Bell and the Negro League guys are in the Hall of Fame. I'm talking about at the time when there was no recognition, they didn't get their snapshot in time.
It wasn't just that. It's that everybody else was racking up huge numbers, not facing Satchel Paige.
That's what I'm saying. So, yes, I am very aware that the Negro League players, the greats, are in the Hall of Fame.
Park Forest Bunky, you're on The Score. Hello, Bunky.
Hello?
Yes.
Hey, thanks for let me on, guys. You know, I always like to embrace and mention that at 56 years old, I'm out of your demo, so I don't, what I'm about to say doesn't matter. But no, all joking aside, I mean, the Big Red Machine is my all-time favorite team, and I can go into that later. And I love Joe Morgan as a player, but he's a knucklehead. I mean, you know, Bonds, Clemens, A-Rod, Manny, Sheffield, at all. You know, they're all Hall of Famers. Put them all in.
The numbers are there. The number, and we don't know who tried something once or tried something twice or one season. Maybe helped him recover. Yeah, it's just.
We're gonna get these steroids or PEDs don't help you hit a ball. Guys coming out on the text line.
Joe Sheehan is one of those guys. But Joe Sheehan is one of those guys who says it doesn't help you hit home runs. I disagree.
Right. Yeah.
I think it clearly does.
If you're stronger and you can wait a little bit longer, and I mean,
or in Barry Bonds' case, wait a lot longer.
right.
Until the very last second.
And,
split second.
And if guys know you're on steroids and don't want their numbers to go up, they don't pitch to you. And you walk a whole lot.
And you're standing there right next to Babe Ruth in the baseball analyst.
I'm going to go back and look at some of Barry Bonds' numbers right now. And if you hear laughs, you know, in the middle of our conversations, like there was one year where the first quarter of the year he had more home runs than swings and misses.
Mm-hmm. Jason, you just look at his last year as a Giant, and you will get a lot of laughs.
In LaPorte, it is John on the score.
Yeah, I just think Joe needs to go lay down somewhere. He, you know, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence that PED use in pro sports would have been prevalent even back in the 70s. The pro sports athletes could have looked at the Olympic athletes and said, hey,
they did.
It's working for them.
Right.
John, they did. I know people. I have friends who played Major League Baseball in the 1970s who knew exactly who was doing what. Of course they were.
And so, you know, we don't know who the cutoff is. You know, I don't advocate for Bonds and Clemens because they're just jerks.
If we take out all that, it's not the nice guy Hall of Fame.
John's got a personal Hall of Fame.
I agree with you.
Putting him in.
I would love for nothing more than Kurt Schilling to fall down in mineshaft.
Oh, man.
That'd make my day.
The numbers support them being in, and Joe needs to let it go. Yeah. That's all there is to it.
Looking out, John.
I don't think he's got to get some sleep, John.
Yeah, John's a little groggy.
Talk about going and laying down. I think we might be projecting.
2007, Barry Bonds' last year at 42 years old, Dan. Mm-hmm. I'll give you the numbers after an update. He walked 120 times intentionally in 04.
Yep.
120. Wasn't there a moment
they walked
where
him with the bases loaded?
Yes. He got intentionally walked with the bases loaded. They don't help you, though. Not at all. Oh, my God. Look at all right, so this is his 07 year. He was a 42-year-old baseball player.
What's the slash line?
His slash line was 276, 480, 565.
Okay.
As a 42-year-old. And that was when he like stopped working out, so it was like flabby roid guy. He had
flabby roid guy.
28 home runs as a 42-year-old, Dan.
Yep.
And 54 strikeouts only.
This is Bill on Capitol Hill on the score. Hello, Bill.
Hello, lads. How's the Empire?
What's up, Bill?
It's in shambles.
I need to lie down with the rest of your listeners because I find myself on the same side as Joe Morgan. Look, I've always considered him like, you know, what happens to herpes if you get a broadcast contract. So I don't know what to do, where to go with this.
But the occasional flare up to remind you how bad it is?
Right. You know, he won't kill you, but when he flares up, it just makes your viscera really uncomfortable. But, the thing about it, lads, is, I mean, I hear the arguments about amphetamines, but, you know, I'm against having amphetamine guys in the hall, too. But the thing about steroids is it's not to be too Marxist about it, but it's disproportional given there's a systemic gap there that because baseball, as you pointed out over the years, is an individual sport masquerading as a team sport, steroids goes directly to that mismatch, and you can just look at the charts and graphs and see how, even if there were PED users in the 70s, 80s, probably the 60s. The fact is, in the 90s, it reached critical mass, and it warped the game. So for me, I realize I'm probably on the wrong side of the demo as well at 43, but the fact is, it took away for me, not just the traditions of the game that I grew up with, but it spoiled the last years of Frank Thomas's regime. It changed.
It shouldn't.
But did it?
It should be. Frank's numbers stand right there.
I still appreciate the hell. He's one of the greatest right-hand hitters that I've ever seen. Him and Manny Ramirez were my childhood. So, and, right. and I know what Manny Ramirez was, well, and I know what Frank was.
This is my point, though, Jay, is that only one of those two guys belonged in your childhood, right? I mean, because we now know, you know, that Manny was chemical, you know, that was a laboratory freak.
Yeah, that's why I brought him up, though. The enjoyment that I got out of him as a kid, though, was still the enjoyment. And then after that, when you mature, right, and you're not thinking the things that you were thinking when you're 13, 14, when you mature, I do appreciate Frank's career more than I appreciated Manny Ramirez's career for those specific reasons that you're bringing up.
Right. So the point is, I'm not. I mean.
I get what you're saying, though, Bill.
If we're going to say that it's a point of maturation that you know we're no longer angry. I don't feel betrayed by Manny Ramirez. I don't have anything personally vested in it. But the fact is, I look at the Hall of Fame atheist that I am is about the only temple I care about in this republic. And I think that those of us who care about you know such things have a right to say no, we're closed for fumigation. So I don't know how else to say.
But you're going
to
yank people out, though, Bill.
The problem is it's like arguing something that's cherry picked from Leviticus, where once you go down that road, nothing can be proven, and you can end up with a very sacred and very empty building in which you're the only one left looking at bare walls.
Well, first of all, that's fine with me because you know what I think about people. But first of all, and second of all, by the way, it's unfair to pick a Bible passage because you know what I think about that.
Well, I did that on purpose. That was not a
inflammatory bastard.
Yes, exactly. I know what I'm doing. So, Bill, I understand where you're coming from. I do. And thank you. And I used to be in lockstep with you. I did. And I'm not trying to...
Is it because you don't want to fight that fight anymore?
No, I'm not. It's not laziness. And it's not that I'm trying to say I'm in any way intellectually superior, because Lord knows I'm not to him. But for me, there became an overwhelming intellectual argument, both in the micro and the macro, both in the what are we really talking about here anyway part of it, and in the look who's already in, look how eras have changed, look how the mores of the game have changed, that right now, show me the numbers and make the argument. And whatever environment it was that was causing people to feel they had to do certain things to compete, when you didn't know if the pitcher across from you was throwing 96 or recovering from an injury because of what he was taking, what baseball was winking at, what baseball knew about, and it gave cover and understood when you had your active obfuscators and your administrators who secretly were cashing it all in. And like you say, Jay, that if you enjoyed watching it, I mean, talk to Red Sox fans about knowing now the guys on whose back that brought them the curse breaker. That curse isn't getting unbroken.
Yeah, and they're okay with it. He's Dan Bernstein. I'm Jason Goff. You're on hold. We will get to you on the other side of Adam Kramer's spot.
Go.
We will talk a little college football. So Kendall, Lisa, Charlie, everybody on hold. We will get to your phone calls. We promise you before the hour is up.
Segment brought to you by Advance Auto Parts. Whether you're looking to change your air filter or replace your brakes, you'll find the parts you need and knowledgeable team members ready to help at Advance Auto Parts. Let's get you back on the road. College football talk next on The Score.
I'm Kramer.
Adam Kramer.
Hey,
college football writer for Bleacher Report.
This turnover chain, and it's important. It's more than just a symbol. 10-karat gold and Cuban links has got orange and green jewels on it.
Someone said a Cuban link, and once we all looked at what a Cuban link was and how it could look, it was a no-brainer.
Follow him on Twitter at Kegs and Eggs.
Mayfield rolling out, and it's caught. It's a touchdown.
And look, he's just looking at the Kansas sideline.
Right there. Now, that's
inappropriate.
That's inappropriate, uncalled for.
Adam Kramer with Bernstein and Golf on 670 The Score.
With a light schedule this weekend, we got some actual affairs to talk about with our guy Adam Kramer here on the Bernstein and Golf Show. You're listening to 670 The Score.
Adam Kramer joins us on the Grossinger Auto Group hotline. Find over 5,000 vehicles every day at grossinger.com. So was justice served in the Baker Mayfield situation? Must he feel shame and not get the start? And that's what will be his final college game.
It's fine. Yes, it was probably across the line, but to me, this was a young coach trying to assert himself with his team, and he's going to miss his series. You'll see Kyler Murray out there, which is a name that recruiting junkies have been waiting to see for a while anyway, and then he'll probably still throw for 350 yards and three touchdowns, and then he's going to win the Heisman. I think the interesting thing here, though, as you guys know, the Heisman voting gets a little weird in how people view this award.
Not for me.
Well, not for me either, and I don't vote. But in general, he's going to win. But you can already feel this coming, like the justification of leaving him off a ballot. And it's going to happen.
I hope not.
It is.
I really hope not. And I should mention, by the way, final home game, I should say, by the way. But I thought you were going a different way. And we'll talk to Matt Miller about this, where the NFL people are like, well, I don't know if that guy's got football character now. He's going to be our quarterback.
This is sort of who he is, and I love it personally. I think he does a really good job walking that line. He plays with this constant edge. This is something you see on the sideline often. Again, this one was a little bit more amplified, but this is kind of who you're getting, and I think it depends on who you're talking to. I think most football people will say that they'll rather have a guy like this because this is probably what makes him great. I'm sure if you talk to the certain people, they'll just despise it. And they think he makes it about him, which to me, it's never been. So in terms of the whole Baker Mayfield, where do you stand? Like, this guy has been the most exciting and entertaining and polarizing player we've had from the start, where he planted the flag at Ohio State and all that thing, or at least attempted to. This just sort of fits him. And yeah, it was across the line, and sure, you can deal with the punishment. I'm just glad we'll get to see more of him. And Oklahoma at this point looks like the safest bet we have for the playoff.
Yeah, and I watch Michigan, Wisconsin, and I know the Wisconsin people are going to come after me like they did on Twitter, so I won't ask the Wisconsin question yet. I'm going to ask you the Michigan question. If Jim Harbaugh loses against Ohio State again this weekend, what does that mean for him? Because are we not talking about Jim Harbaugh maybe thinking about doing something else with his coaching career, or is this just the NFL came and raided your cupboard and you still got to stock up?
That's kind of it. They're in a transition mode. This year to me was going to be about how it went, because you lost too many snaps and reps, and you can't realistically look at the job that he's doing based on all the talent that they lost. Being said, he's making, what, $10 million mm-hmm. a year. The expectations of Michigan are high. I think he's doing a really good job overall. The problem is, in these games, rivalry games, games against good teams, games against top 25 teams, they've not played particularly well. And this game does mean a great deal to everyone at Michigan and obviously Ohio State. So I don't necessarily think you're going to take a dramatic conclusion away from this if and when Ohio State wins and they're a double-digit favorite. There's still a long way to go. My thing with him is, you are a quarterback whisperer. That's been what you've gotten your label for. They need to figure out who that guy is. If he can find that quarterback, they're going to be fine. They're recruiting great. They're going to develop great. He's going to be great. I think it's going to work out. But not being able to find that quarterback, if I'm a Michigan fan, that's my biggest concern long term.
Alabama, Auburn, another one that we're looking at. What else are we going to pay attention to this weekend?
I get a feeling that Clemson, South Carolina might be weird. And I could be wrong there. I really do. It's a weird spot for Clemson. I wonder if you're thinking about the ACC championship and Miami and that being sort of a playoff elimination game, which it could very well be. South Carolina, Will Muschamp's got them with 7 wins. They've got a good young quarterback. They're playing some defense. You know, it's a game that I just think, you know, I don't know. And then in terms of the Iron Bowl, it does feel larger than life. Bama has just a mortal sense about it. And yet they're still a favorite in this game. Auburn, if they can duplicate that game plan they did against Georgia at home, you know, they could be huge there. So, yeah, I think ultimately when you're talking about games that would impact the playoff, that's where I'd start. And I think Clemson, that's just a spot they got to be careful with if they're looking ahead.
All right, now I'll ask my Wisconsin question. I watched that game, and for 3 quarters, that did not look like one of the dominant teams in football. I know they have a terrific running game, as usual, in Wisconsin. I know their defense is outstanding. But when you start giving me bowl-eligible wins and top 50 wins and all that other stuff, I'm still with the eye test. I still think Auburn and Georgia are better than Wisconsin. And I think Wisconsin's got an easy road. Not an easy road, but I think they got an easier road than any of the other teams, especially with them being at 5. Do you, after another week, think that they are one of the 4 best teams in the country?
I like how a few minutes ago said you like weren't going to dig
in. Yeah, I know. I was going to ask you the Rashad Penny, Doak Walker question, but I'm like, nah, to hell with that.
No, that's good. I think you can say both things, that if Wisconsin wins out, they probably deserve to be in the playoff, and that they probably aren't one of the 4 best teams in college football. And you can say both of those things exclusively. I don't think you'll insult – Wisconsin fans. The comparison to Iowa from 2 years ago has been made repeatedly.
You would definitely insult Wisconsin fans, by
the
way.
Jump on my Twitter timeline every once in a while. The Wisconsin fans are out for my head, and that's fine.
Well, that is fine. But, no, they're good, and it is kind of ugly, and that's sort of their brand, and they like it that way, and that's fine. I don't think they're as good as Georgia or Auburn or Alabama or Clemson or Oklahoma, and they're probably in that secondary mix of teams. They'd be probably a touchdown underdog or will be to Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. I'm not saying that is the definition of what we look for in teams, but that's just the way it is. So if they win out, they're in, and they can validate all of this discussion over the next few weeks. That's the beautiful thing about the current system that we have. But you have questions about the quarterback, which are real. They've had some injuries on defense, although that group has played great. We'll see. Wisconsin has a chance to prove all this, then your Twitter mentions will probably be a mess depending on what happens next.
Chip Kelly to Florida, and if so, is the magic still there? Is he still as evolved as the college game has gotten to incorporate so many of his principles? Is he still better at it than other people?
You know, the young blogger me wants to think yes, that he will get to Florida and be anxious and ambitious, but that man doesn't like to recruit. He's openly stated he does not like to recruit, and him in Florida just feels like an odd fit. I think his presence alone would be larger than life, and you'll get kids to commit there. Their recruiting has been down, by the way, these last few years. It's fine, but by Florida standards, it has not been nearly as good as it should be. I still feel like, and this is, again, kind of a group think, UCLA might be a better fit for him. You can go on the West Coast. You can do your thing. He's more comfortable with the state of California. Competition's a little bit easier to deal with. That just feels better. And the fact that UCLA is just paying Jim Moore, what, $11, $12 million, not the coach, to try and get in on this thing, as Florida flew to his house in New Hampshire the other night to try and seal this deal, that tells me at least he wants the thing. So it's hard to know, because the whole – persona of Chip Kelly has faded some with the NFL, but as we've seen with other coaches, sometimes it just doesn't work that way. I still think he'd be a great get. I think he'd be a really great get for UCLA, honestly, if they can get that. I think Florida, if Scott Frost is your backup plan or whoever it might be, is still in a pretty good position to get a good coach.
Adam, happy holidays to you and your family, man. We'll talk to you next weekend.
Likewise, guys. Take care.
That is Adam Kramer of Bleacher Report, brought to you by Dell. Dell Small Business Black Friday sale is on now. The lowest prices of the year and free shipping on everything. Shop doorbusters on business PCs with Intel Core processors. Call 1-877-BUY-DELL. Move some things around. Matt Miller is going to be at 3:20. That means we can get to some of these baseball calls. Some people that we're hanging on right there. We'll do In Other News at 3:40. Then it's going to be Brian Billick and Hub and all sorts of stuff coming your way.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame talk next segment that we were doing, the segment before. And also, I got some questions for you, because there is a young slugger who barged into an office and said, trade me or else.
Trade me right effing now.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the prospects that the Cardinals and the Giants might be handing over for this guy. I got some questions for the Cub fan out there.
All right, we'll do that. It's the Bernstein and Goff Show. You got the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.